This is Lauren Bon, and welcome to Dub Labs Out There. Imagine a soundscape that not only stimulates your auditory senses, but also connects us with the more than human world. Metabolic Sonic's groundbreaking practice, in which we have literally broken through the concrete of the LA River, fuses the machine with the biological.
We have to save ourselves and each other, and not just soil and all of that, but for all these different aspects, right? Everything's tied together. And, you know, hopefully what you see is, like, you don't actually need to be an expert, right? Mm-hmm. You don't need to be a landscape architect to do this type of thing. Because actually traditional ecological knowledge, it's not like people were being given landscape architecture degrees, right? Like, if we start paying attention to the systems and what exists and what the land is telling us, that's what we can learn from each other, all of these different things, right? And, you know, landscape and soil might not be one person's thing, but then doing care and cooking is also part of this whole ecosystem. So it's all interrelated, and, you know, there's experts for certain things, but a lot of this is, you know, we teach each other, we learn from each other, and it's not rocket science. Probably need an expert for that, but, you know, a lot of living systems you don't. Love that. Sorry. All the way in the back.
I had a question about other, like, local Lincoln Heights movements to save Flat Top.
There hasn't been any concrete connection between moving mountains and land defense as of yet, but I love the way you're thinking, because, and this kind of goes into, like, the full circle and how we started, right? Everything that we're confronting right now is a product of a colonial system that is protecting itself by guising oppression in the environment, by keeping people separate, by isolating each other, by isolating the ways that we oppress one another from themselves. And, like, we're seeing that firsthand with the rhetoric that, you know, the Trump administration is using as a pretext to deport indigenous people by saying they're criminals, or, like, we're othering those people and blaming them for all of the grievances and oppression that we're experiencing in this country right now. So I guess what I'm saying is they're all connected. And I think for moving mountains and other ecological reparations work to really take hold, we as people have to start connecting those things together and articulating environmental injustice and the way that our current system perpetuates that. And by pushing the status quo, by doing things post-legitimately, by talking to your community, by educating others, by trying to enact things on your own with community through mutual aid and through other networks, because our current governance structures are regressing. Like, we are losing constitutional rights that we have considered inalienable for since our founding. Our very country is founded on colonialism and oppression, and it exists because we extract, we exploit, we oppress. And so, yes, I, as an organizer, should be connecting moving mountains to everything that's going on over there, and vice versa. And I'm actually doing my best to, like, get community here, because what's happening at Undevelopment One, I think, is completely mind-blowing for a lot of organizers, because we tend to operate with a scarcity mindset, and we tend to try to operate within the current system, but this provides an alternative that dismantles that whole system, mm-hmm. right? And I think dismantling the whole system is really the only way forward for us to actually execute meaningful solutions. Long-winded way of saying, yeah. Thank you for connecting them. I need to do a better job as an organizer, and we all can participate in disseminating everything we've learned into our networks, because it all starts with a culture shift, right? We're all operating in a culture that is continuously perpetuating these systems of oppression. But if we start thinking outside that box, maybe we can escape the whole thing.
Questions or thoughts? Okay.
I'm just curious, does the Lincoln Heights community know that this exists?
There are sets of people, but unfortunately, the reality of Lincoln Heights is that it has such a high turnover rate. The average community member in Lincoln Heights stays here for 6 or 7 years, and then they move out or are evicted or displaced. And so, as an organizer in a community like Lincoln Heights, which is pretty much synonymous with a lot of communities around here, it's a constant need to re-educate, to like recoalesce these networks, because, and that's kind of what keeps these systems of oppression existing, is there's always new people, and the old organizers and the old leaders are constantly pushed out and evicted, and so we constantly have to reproduce these mutual aid systems, organizing networks, because we're always under attack. So yes, there are some people who know, but there are a whole set of new people, new folks that are moving into this community that don't know anything about this. And we at the studio also have to do a better job of open sourcing everything that's going on here to community members throughout this area. That's partly what we're doing here with these tours. But there are probably other ways that we should be doing that as well.
On that kind of train of thought, I know someone mentioned that, like, kind of called this like a sanctuary. And it makes me think, like, how can it be a sanctuary for not just wildlife, but also for people?
Yeah.
I think a lot of times there's this perception that, like, we are, like, as people are separate from the land that we live on. And especially as a project that's rooted in like this idea of regeneration and reparations and all that, how can we also extend that to the community? I think there's a
little blank space up there under safety. I think there's a lot of safety in community, especially, you know, recently in LA. I think we've seen that a lot with like ICE raids and everything. Like, there is safety in community, and yeah. I think this is a really good opportunity to kind of reach into that.
Yeah, 100%. We actually are working on that with some of the community orgs that are high vulnerability. That's a word I can't say today. And actually are having meetings around that of how do we do that? How do we keep it safe? And how do we keep it for, yeah, people who really need it at this time? And so, great question. Love to do more of it. But yeah, that is, we have a meeting a little later today to actually talk with some of the groups about that. But yeah, they're not separate. We all need it.
I just had a question. You said you grew up in the neighborhood. As a community organizer.
I grew up right near where your studio is.
Oh, cool. Yeah.
I grew up right near.
Oh, awesome. So as a community organizer, have you found kind of certain pre-existing strategies or developed strategies to address what you were talking about, the like high turnover in the community, because it's all about the people. It's all about the community and doing the work together. Like, how have you addressed that? Because it's exhausting.
It is exhausting.
You know?
So your question is, how do we build resilience in our community?
Yeah, and what strategies have you used to address the turnover in the community and that lack of interconnectedness and maybe shared values and common understanding?
I think that really depends on what type of organizing I'm doing. Mm-hmm. But for the most part, a lot of the organizing that I did in my very beginning of my career as an organizer was around environmental injustice, urban greening, and green gentrification. Because the state park was just being built in that time. There was a lot of talk about revitalizing the LA River. Our community's been trying to defend Flat Top for generations now. And the city has been like investing a lot in this part of Los Angeles. And whenever that ends up happening, community members instantly are fearful because our community exists because it's been disinvested for so long. And once you bring in these new amenities, once you clean soil, once you bring clean air and access to parks, prices go up and we're priced out and we're displaced. So I'm literally trying to articulate that the system that we're operating within is self-perpetuating, because any work that we do towards like improving the environment and giving people the fundamental rights that we have as human beings, as living things, to have access to a clean environment, they're commodified in this system. And so the work that I was doing for a long time by community members was like, I don't want this because this is not really gonna be for me. I'm gonna be priced out eventually. I'd rather live in a degraded environment and still have the right to live here than have a clean environment and have to move somewhere else where it's an even worse environment, right? So what I usually do as an organizer is I try to teach people how all these things are connected with each other. I try to ground the folks in the reality that you're operating within a system that has convinced you that you will never have right to a clean environment. I'm not willing to accept that. Are you willing to accept that? Mm-hmm. More often than not, folks are like, actually, you're right. Ideally, this is not what we should be dealing with or accepting. And then as organizers, we're trying to bridge gaps, we're trying to build connections. So any of the work that I do around urban greening or green gentrification, I connect it with housing advocates and housing organizers. I connect it with social justice organizations, because it really is gonna take an interdisciplinary network of people that's gonna confront the whole system to like really clean the environment and stabilize these communities, so that way we're like literally decoupling this commodification. Yeah. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. And I would add, so, you know, in my former life as doing landscape architecture, right, you get a project And, you know, you want to be super responsive to the community, but a lot of times there's no money in there for that, to actually engage and invest in the community. But I think, like, this is where we have to take it upon ourselves to, like, really look at, like, what our role is in that system of kind of the gentrification, and to, like, fighting for a different policy and, like, going on your free time and being invested in the communities if you want. It's a long-term investment, and sometimes it's a small project somewhere, and, like, you know, I would say, and I'm, you know, we don't know your project, so I'm not saying, just talking in landscape architecture in general, we actually should take on more of a role of also telling whoever's paying for that to teach them, right? That, like, this is a huge piece and an important part of the system. And, like, maybe it's not, like, spending the money on the paving pattern and the super cool design thing. It's, like, actually spending that money in the community on something that, like, they actually want and need. You know, it's, like, this is not designed and planned and, you know, in any way, and it's totally different. But, like, I think there's a shift that we need to do in landscape architecture and architecture in general of what is actually important and where the investment should really go. I mean, going to reviews at many of the schools around here, they're still teaching what they've been teaching for a really long time. And I think this is also where, if you are in this role and this environment, you should be teaching our fellow landscape architects what we need to do, right? Like, we have the responsibility, not just within our communities, but in our broader community of who we work with and all of that. So
the other thing I will add to that too is, I don't think any sort of urban greening, or I don't think I've ever seen a real model of that take place in terms of, like, the community truly leading it. There's always some sort of even artifact of a top-down structure that usually ends up perpetuating an organization or a set of people coming into a space and saying, this is what we think should happen. Let's do it. And then community being like, maybe not there, or maybe not in that way, or can we do this first? And then them being completely ignored, and then there's some disenfranchisement happening that continuously reproduces this colonial framework and decision making. So I always advocate for landscape architects to really truly listen to community first, to kind of set aside what you think should happen and learn from folks about what they truly want and how they want to do it. Because the reality is, our community knows best about what should happen in their community. And part of dismantling these systems is really centering them and empowering them to have more agency in what happens. Does that make sense?
About, like, how those conversations are held.
And yeah.
In what context and in what way? Because oftentimes those community conversations can still be shaped to serve pre-existing
yeah.
narratives.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, great, that sounds great, as long as it makes sense with what we want to do and need to do
yeah.
to
exactly
yeah,
yeah.
to serve
yeah.
some sort of pre-existing idea. Yeah.
I think this is the thing, is like, we in mutual aid building, and we like talk about like community, and it's usually
I had to get off there.
It's usually like, oh, hearts and flowers and whatever. It's like complicated and it's complex, and you're dealing with all these levels of histories and displacement and all these things that are happening. And to think that you can come into a community meeting and be like, hey, like, there's a lot of trust that has to be built up over a long period of time. And with the studio, I mean, I've been at the studio almost 6 years, right? And it has taken a really long time to invest in a lot of the community groups, because there is distrust, right?
Yeah.
Like, we don't know you, we don't know what you're doing, seems like wrong. Like, it takes a really long time, which is really hard when you have a project deadline. But you kind of have to go through it. But that's where it gets into, you probably need to, like, have a, you know, non-budget work if you really want to invest in the community, it's like a lot of extra work, and it's working through some of those things, and you'll never win everyone over, right? But you have to, like, setting the tone ahead of time too, being like, we're coming at this, we need to hear from you what you want. These are the goals that we've been given that we need to achieve. And being as blatantly honest as possible and say it's gonna be rough, you know, and then try and connect with a couple of people like Diego, who are in the community, who kind of see both sides, right? Because I know this is a conversation we have a lot of the time of marrying the two sides of what, you know, is a reality of a project and what is the reality of a community, and how do you bridge those gaps? We're not gonna agree on everything, and this is for everything. We're not gonna agree on everything, but we need to be moving in the same direction, right? Like, we need to all be moving forward in the same direction. And I think setting that and saying compromise is the best we're gonna get to for all of us, mm-hmm. is maybe the way to start with those meetings, and just being super honest. Cause yeah, it's like, do you want A, B, or C? Put a sticker on it. Like, that is not a great, you know. I've been in so many of those meetings. It's like, yeah. And I know it's changed and we're changing, and like, really being part of that is that process. And it's uncomfortable, but so is a dying planet. So, you know, let's go for it.
But that's what I love about moving mountains too, is it's kind of separate from all of these systems of exploitation and oppression. Anyone can take that soil, anyone can do with it what they need to do with it, and in that way, it really is a form of mutual aid that is revolutionary in of itself, right? Like, if someone wants to grow food and needs access to clean soil, like, that's why moving mountains should exist. If someone wants to use that to green their community, it could be a vehicle for that. It's, I think, part of what makes it so hard to work with each other is we've been so disillusioned from a sense of community and belonging to a place that, and part of our healing that we have to do as a community is to recreate these reciprocal relationships to the land, to build relationships to each other, right? And to build that culture of care and understanding. And so I guess that's how I'll conclude it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, I like
soil is revolutionary. We have to open source it to everyone, right? And we really do need each and every one of you to help take these ideas and run with them. And if you have any questions or ideas of how we can make this happen to scale, we're here for you. Just hit us up. You have Andrea's contact info. She can connect you with us. Yes.
And then just as a, because we're always doing like 20 million things, the Meandros Project, like I mentioned, if you have nonprofits or orgs that would be interested in that, let us know. We are going to be starting up Lee Adams, who has worked with the studio at various capacities over, I don't know, decade, long time, who's a master gardener. Just amazingly extraordinary person with living systems and everything else. Her house was burnt down in the fires. We're going to start looking at her site as a test case for soil remediation and also a resource hub potentially for soil and logs. And so we're going to do volunteering, we're going to do educational things and outreach about that. We're still working on quite a few things for that, but that will be coming soon. So just make sure you're on our mailing list. We also have a print studio the first Monday of every month. And we table most Thursdays at the farmers market, the state park. So you can find us many, many ways. And yes, we'd love to keep the dialogue going. The hope is to kind of, come up with, we have three more tours at the moment. And so it'd be nice to have maybe like a gathering and a work session around some of these ideas for anyone who's interested in kind of like what could be next steps and how do we all engage. I just spitballed that right now, so stay tuned, but that would be awesome. So anyways, thank you all for coming. This was so amazing. Please eat some pastries. We have seeds over here.